All right, welcome to another episode of the Self Storage Insight Podcast. I'm Ben Shirey. Today, I'm going to be joined by two guests. Brett, as always, excited to have you back on the podcast with me. I always enjoy doing the show with you. I think we always get into some good conversations, and you're always a lot of fun to talk to. So thank you for taking a little time to jump on another podcast with me here today. And then in addition to Brett, we have Chase. Chase, with the call center operations with Copper Storage Management. And so, Chase, if you don't mind, could you give our audience just a little bit of your background and how you're involved and maybe your role at the call center, that sort of thing, a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. And excited to be here. Thanks for having us on. I've been with the Copper team since 2020. So since day one, since we launched the management company. And I think my original role was call center manager. And since then I had, so that was when we were building the call center from ground up, from 30 employees to, you know, now 60. And I've worn many hats, in between, then and now with Copper, but I am back since, last summer, since about July of last summer, back in the call center, management role. So overseeing the entire call center operations.
Awesome. And as far as the call center there, if you don't mind, give us a little bit more information on that. Like, is it US based? Do you work with some US reps, some overseas? What's the kind of the structure of the call center?
Yeah, it's Brett, go ahead.
No. So we do both. So it used to be Chase put together all American agents when we started and we're a lot smaller. We actually trained everybody in Birmingham and Chase did all in person. We got bigger and bigger and bigger and realized how inefficient that ended up becoming. And so we searched for a lot of other partners that could potentially be third party. And so we landed on a company out of the Philippines that were their exclusive American client for storage. And so we were able to get an exclusivity agreement. So the agents are really ours and Chase can go into, you know, how they're trained and the oversight. And we've done some really cool things, which I think there's some topics we'll get into with AI and all of that. But we also have American agents. We have basically like a tiered approach. Tier one are the Philippines agents for all the base stuff. And then we have American managers that are the tier two that are always working as well. That way, if something needs to be escalated or some issues, you have that influx of both.
Awesome. And then, yeah, Chase, on that, do you kind of oversee both of those or do you mainly just oversee U.S. Agents or how does that work?
No, I oversee both. And we have managers that manage just the American tier two shift managers. And then we have managers that manage the Filipino agents as well. And I oversee both of them.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I'm very interested in the conversation. So I'm excited, really excited to kind of pick you guys' brain on it a little bit. What are some things maybe that you see when a self-storage facility is looking to utilize a call center? What are the main things they're looking to do by utilizing a service like you guys offer?
Well, the main thing is answer the phone, right? The storage industry right now is as competitive as it's ever been. So having someone just able to answer the phone every time it rings and provide just a base level service is a good start. So take payments. And, you know, we're, you know, for the past 10 years, definitely the past 5 years, we're in a position where we can rent units online, or over the phone, and do everything digitally. So if you miss a call now, if you miss a lead, you're missing, you know, potential revenue. So that is the most important thing.
Absolutely. And just kind of a little story on that. I was actually calling around some local facilities near me. I like to do some video stuff, you know, at different facilities, different layouts, you know, whatever. And so I called around to a couple of different facilities just in my really close proximity. And only one out of the nine that I called, one answered the phone. And so with a lot of these smaller facilities, I feel like they're really missing out on a lot of lead generation and opportunity there by not utilizing somebody that's always available, especially if it's like a side business and they're not having an on-site manager that's there all the time, but it's this side thing that they have. That's really common in a lot of self-storage facility cases. And the fact that a lot of people don't answer the phone when you call is kind of alarming. I mean, as far as it's going to really hurt their revenue in the long run.
Totally. I think now that new SSA demand study that came out last year said that I think it's 84-85% of all renters rent from one of the first two places they called. And so, I mean, that's an alarming stat. So you really have to be able to answer the phone. I think something unique Chase built for us that really kind of made ours stand out. And he was really the person who designed how this worked, because it really didn't exist beforehand, is, you know, because we were remote and we were the first really to do this third party remote management build out and had to kind of create this from scratch. The rest of the call centers were designed to take payments and reservations. So they were designed to get you in the door to meet a face-to-face manager. And so Chase had to build this puzzle of, well, our number one responsibility is renting units, which made it very different than the other active call centers. And we had to have that internally. So when we first started, we looked at using one of the other big, incredible call centers in the business, but they really weren't designed as a number one priority to rent units. So Chase had to build these pieces and figure out, well, how do we do that differently, where these agents' job over anything else every day is to rent units, and then everything else is secondary. And that was a difficult feat to build, and he's done a great job at being able to put that together.
Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't an easy task to solve either, as far as how do you guys kind of work with that then, as far as Chase, if you don't mind, how do you, as far as a new facility coming on, do you have to be integrated with their property management software? What does that kind of the onboarding process look like for a company that wants to start utilizing your service?
Sure. We have a couple different options. Our back-end call software integrates with 5 or 6 different property management software. So the primary one, most common, is StoreEdge, and of course SiteLink and a few of the other new ones. But that's the key piece. Yeah, if we don't have that, then we can't move forward.
Okay. And what's the implementation time look like for a company that is compatible and you're going to start moving forward as far as working together? How long does it start from the time they decide they want to move forward with you guys till they're up and running and you guys are answering phones for them and that sort of thing?
Sure. It depends, obviously, on seasonality, how busy we are, how many new clients we're taking on at the time. If it's just the call center product, a week, we can get you, from time a contract is signed to answering phones in a week. If it's the full management, third-party management side, it's a little bit longer because there are a lot of other pieces to that puzzle. So, usually a month lead time there. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And it's really good feedback, especially for people that are looking and not sure, like how big of a feat is this, right, that I'm about to go on as far as setting up something like this. So as far as benefits that you guys offer to a company, you said you primarily focus on, reserving units, online reservations, that sort of thing. What's your call response time or your call response, your answering numbers like? Is there ever a time where you don't answer a call when somebody calls a specific facility that works with you guys, or do you answer 100% of the calls?
Yes. So the way that those stats work is, so we have SLA, service level agreements and KPIs we have to match. And you can never get to 100, because if someone, for instance, calls in and they hang up before it ever even rings, or if they get to the IVR that says press 1 to rent a unit, press 2 if you're an existing customer, if they hang up, that counts against your answer rate. And so for an industry-wide piece, we work with call potential, what should be the amount that means we're answering when these people call during hours. And so that SLA is typically 95%, because that takes into account the other 5% of errors of people hanging up or anything happening. And then Chase can also speak to, I believe, going into the KPIs, it's really important is how fast you answer the phone. And that 15 seconds, 20 seconds piece is just absolutely essential as a top end number to be able to get someone on the phone to take care of them. That way they're not waiting too long. That part's pretty essential as well.
We set that bar at 20 seconds. Usually we answer, our goal is 95% of our calls within the first 20 seconds. And like Brett said, that goes a long way. Obviously on the front end, it's customer service. Nobody wants to be on, waiting on hold. But on the back end, it helps with labor. How many calls can you answer in a certain amount of time? How many people does it take to answer however many calls you're getting? So just how quick you get to that call goes a long way, the overall health of the call center.
How many calls are we at a month now, Chase? Just curious.
I just looked for January. We had 50,000. That's inbound and outbound.
Okay. Wow. Do you have any idea how many of those calls were like people calling, soliciting to like buy a facility or telemarketing? Like, do you get a lot of those calls, and how do you weed through those?
We do get some of them, not as much as you would think, but they just get dispositioned into a certain category and never make it to our, so we have smart routing through call potential. So it either recognizes the phone number as a lead or an existing tenant. So there's ways to kind of filter through those before they make it to an agent.
Yeah. And one other question kind of along those lines, as far as metrics and tracking and things, how much of your call volume comes in? Because I mean, as far as the things that I've read or the things that I've seen about, you know, phone calls coming into self-storage facilities, a lot of it's payments related, and a lot of self-storage facilities run proration and they all bill on the first. Do you see a huge influx in calls like on the second, third, and fourth of the month, and then it kind of dies off? Or how do you float that, I guess, would be my question.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The last week of the month through the end of the first week of the month is exponentially busier than any other time. So it becomes a puzzle for staffing, you know, for labor,
right?
Because you know you got to have a certain amount of agents on to answer these calls, but then enough to keep them busy. We usually do retraining or collections calls or any sort of outbound tasks. We save those for the middle of the month when the inbound volume isn't is quite as high.
Nice. And so you guys will actually then go through and call like people that are past due, people that are about to go into auction status, that sort of thing as well. How involved are you in that part of it?
Sure. The answer is yes and no. We have some options available. So we have an automated collections workflow that makes a series of outbound text, emails, and auto calls based on your delinquency, or a tenant's delinquency. And then there are some outlier situations where we make outbound calls if we're focusing in on a specific facility, or we notice that the AR has gone up, or we have a lot of units for auction. And we have that we could get into it. We have a separate auction team that makes outbound calls for any units that are in the lien process. So there are some different categorization to make those manual outbound collection calls.
Okay. Yeah. Cause on the surface, you know, whenever you think about, oh, I have a call center that's, you know, taking the calls, there's definitely a lot more to it, right, than it seems like on the surface. And so, yeah, that's very interesting. Anything on that you'd like to add there, Brett, as far as the outbound versus inbound stuff with the call center?
Yeah, we get calls a lot of people trying to run a facility remote, and it's their first time, or they're trying to transition and they don't want to have managers. And so they look at a lot of the other call centers and they think, okay, these are really one in the same. But you just said it perfectly when you responded to Chase. There are way more responsibilities that we had to build out for the call center to do for these management clients, because traditional call centers, it just doesn't work the same, because you do have to deal with collections. You do have to deal with automated workflows. You have to be able to actually sign the lease at the very end and give access control information and DaVinci codes. There's all these pieces because you don't have an on-site manager. So it is vital to really work through the operations of a remote facility or even a hybrid facility compared to maybe the needs of a fully staffed facility to have a call center. It's very kind of two different avenues of responsibilities and holes to fill.
Mm-hmm. Right. So like the onboarding process could look completely different for different companies based on the needs that they need you guys to meet.
That's right.
Internally, we don't even call it a call center. We call it an operations center because there is just so much more than, you know, traditional call centers take inbound calls, take payments, maybe rent units. There's so much more to that. Internally, we call it the operations center because the term call center just doesn't do it justice.
Yeah. Operations center makes a lot more sense there once you start diving into all the pieces that you guys are putting together. So awesome. Well, I know the last time I talked to you, Brett, we had talked a little bit about AI and how you were kind of implementing AI with the call center. Would either one of you care to kind of start that conversation back off, and how has that affected your business? What are you implementing, that sort of thing?
And I'll tell before Chase gets in, because he's the one implementing it, just to recap. Yeah, so we you know, always look at ways to improve quality control and how to improve every process that we have. And AI has a lot of incredible applications that are only going to exponentially grow over the next few years. If anyone listening to this, you want to see something crazy, look at Sora AI that just got announced. Watch some videos on YouTube or Facebook, whatever. It will blow your mind compared to the capability of AI a year ago compared to now is just exponential growth, and it's going to continue. And so one thing we've looked at is, well, where do you apply it? And so one of our first instances of AI, which Chase can get into, would be Swivel, which is a chat system on our website. So essentially, you know, it can provide automated responses to questions, and we build that out with Swivel as a partner. And, you know, we tell them exactly what the responses need to be and facility info, and then it learns over time how to answer better. But we also have humans integrated. So if someone runs into a question that can't be answered, or something that, you know, they look at it and it needs to be escalated, or someone's frustrated, a real person, one of our agents, just steps right in and takes over the chat and can deal with people. So that was the first instance. And then the most recent instance to improve our system was Call Finder, which is an AI system for quality control. And I can kind of let Chase, you know, touch on both of those pieces.
Sure. You know, first of all, I can't say enough about Swivel and those guys over there. It's a great company, and we've been able to kind of mesh and grow together. And, you know, again, the chatbot was the initial product that we used, but there's so much more involved since we've started using their review solicitation process, that our total amount of reviews that we've received has gone up, but even more importantly, total amount of positive reviews has gone up. So they're able to set up different marketing campaigns and stuff like that. So there's tons of features there as well. And we're actually working on building a work order ticketing system using AI, where it would act similar to the chatbot eventually, where someone submits a work order ticket. And if their AI can resolve it first before it even gets to any of our internal operations, they handle that on the front end, and then it kicks.
That's
back
awesome.
To, yeah. Oh, it's going to be a game changer.
That's huge.
And just AI in general, you know, like Brett said, is a game changer. The possibilities are endless, but we just implemented a product called Call Finder for quality assurance. So our QA team, and you know, you go from a couple people manually, like I said, we had 50,000 calls in January, and it's slow season. So how do you even break the ice on listening to manual calls and grading agents, you know, using two or three people? So we're able to implement Call Finder that listens to our calls and grades 100% of our calls using AI. And it presents scorecards and insights and sentiment graders. And I'll tell you, we finally finished the implementation in January. So we're still on the front end of this robust product. Right. You know, since there's still a long way to go, but we're already seeing a difference just in the amount of quality, amount of grading that we can do. And then, of course, being able to focus in on individual agents or individual facilities. If we notice that this particular facility is getting a constant, you know, 70 on the scorecards, then we can start doing a deeper dive and saying, you know, are the gates constantly down here? Is it because people can't get in this door and they end up having to spend 30 minutes on the phone? So it's not just per agent, but it's per facility, per region. We can break it out per region. Like I said, we're just on the front end of that, but we've already seen a significant change in how we do our QA process.
Yeah. And I mean, those metrics I feel like are going to be so valuable as you continue to scale and grow. Yeah. Especially when you're able to break the data down specifically by what you're looking for versus, I mean, there was no way to do that before without somebody listening through and seeing how that was going. And you can't, like, you physically can't unless you overstaff and completely, you know. Yeah. So just being able to access that data is incredible. Yeah. As far as the things that you'll be able to do for quality, for sure. That's awesome.
I compare it to what the normal quality control process for a call center is: finding needles in haystacks. You know, you're listening to a random selection of calls from a random selection of agents, listening to the entire call, and this finds the needles and just gives you the pile of needles instead of having to go through. And so it says, hey, right, here are all the calls that have maybe something needs to change. The script wasn't followed. Tone was different. Customer seemed agitated. And when you're only presented with problems, all of the time is spent on retraining, you know, or hiring or changing agents. And you're only focusing on solutions instead of finding the problem in the first place. And I mean, that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, as far as being able to address that many more issues or that many concerns or whatever, that you know, that's very valuable. That's awesome.
You know, another piece talking about, I think Chase had mentioned review solicitation. You know, one of the biggest issues in remote management, and we sit on a remote management council with all the other largest, you know, companies. And, you know, the industry as a whole has always tried to crack the code of, you know, getting Google reviews and high Google review numbers and amounts and quantity. But with remote, it became very difficult because the only chance in a traditional store is the face-to-face interaction with the manager. They get done with the rental and they're like, look, you can scan this. It really means a lot to me. And you have a human interaction where you feel obligated to give them a review because they helped you and you're going to be back at the facility the next day. And they are going to have to look you in the face and wonder why you didn't give them a review when you said you
Right.
were going to. So it's all that's out the window when you're on the phone. It's very difficult. They don't feel like they really have to. So we, you know, implemented all these automatic procedures and really cool tech solutions with Swivel and now BirdEye to manage it as far as just a back end to response platform. And with Swivel, you know, testing that product with us this month so far, we've had over 400 Google reviews in an average score of 4.6 stars. And for
Wow.
remote, I mean, I cannot even stress how insane that is. In the summer, we were probably getting 25 to 30 reviews in June and July. And to have that in February, the slow time, because most of your reviews come from new rentals, they don't come from, you know, active clients, to
Right.
all of a sudden have that huge spike. It really is all because of their software, the ability to, and they use AI for this to figure out with their algorithm, when should I ping a customer to get the review? At what point? What day after the rental? What should it say? How do they respond differently? And that's just another example of, you know, fine-tuning algorithms with AI to, you know, have the highest probability to get the result that you want. And it's huge for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, Google reviews are huge anyway, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people just undervalue how valuable a Google review really is. When you search for, you know, storage near me and somebody pops up that has tons of 5-star Google reviews, like that adds so much legitimacy to a business. How much involvement is there on your part for implementing that versus the AI kind of just taking over for that implementation process? Like, what all did you have to do to start trying to get more reviews, I guess?
Yeah, Chase, I'll let you hit that.
Sure. Well, there is a human element to that. So, you know, with setting up anything, there's some heavy lifting on the front end, even with technology. But again, we worked with Swivel. We launched it in a couple weeks, and then it took a few weeks to work out the kinks to make sure these drip campaigns were going out on time. We do like a post-rental day one, day three, day seven, or maybe it's 3, 7, 5. Text message, you know, rate your experience 8 to 10, and go on from there. So once that's set up, that's done. And then you know, you don't, if you find you need to tweak it based on the analytics, based on the response time, maybe you change day three to day five, four, or something like that. But that's easy. But then we also started offering incentives to our employees to capture those reviews. So that's something that we're just doing internally. And of course, that's been a ton of help too. So AI is one piece, but you're still talking to a person. It, you know, we tried to start straying away from the term unmanned, right? Because you still have the interaction and the personable effect there. So that's why we say remote management, because there's still a lot of the human element.
You're right about, and I really don't think about that enough. The incentive programs make a huge difference. When you're paying our call center agents are getting bonuses for having reviews and having rentals, and we're able to track those. I mean, it always has a direct effect on performance when you can reward those. And that, I mean, that's made a huge difference. In responding to reviews, we don't use automated responses. You have a choice to use AI to respond to Google reviews. That's becoming a more popular thing. But I never feel like they sound personable enough yet. They probably will at some point. So we do use humans to actually respond to reviews. And we have for any negative review, we incentivize our managers to reach out to the tenant who left the review and try to get the review changed. And we give a bonus based on that as well. And that's been very successful because a lot of times we've noticed one of the biggest result, one of the biggest issues you see in Google reviews are gate issues. And so if an owner doesn't want to put in CapEx to fix a gate, if a tenant shows up and the gate is just wide open and, you know, they no maintenance to fix it, that bothers people. And so we've seen those one-star reviews changed to 4- and 5-star reviews just because they reached out and said, look, we understand. Here's a $10 rent credit or whatever's necessary. We fixed the gate. It's good to go now. And so when you can stay on top of it and use humans to go in and still have that contact, like Chase said, it can make a huge difference overall on your success rate.
Yeah. And I mean, I think too, like the one other benefit that I would see with that is that like a business owner may not even realize they got a negative review, right? If they're not on top of staying on top of that, that sort of thing, I mean, they could easily just miss that. Oh, somebody left me a 1-star review and it's days or weeks before they see it. And it's already too late at that point to change it anyway. So having a team behind you that is actually looking into the well-being of your business, I mean, that in itself is a completely different thing that I think a lot of people don't think about a lot. as far as then with the call center, any use cases or any particular like companies that you've set up that you'd like to share some results or maybe some benefits that they saw, or anything like that, like any success stories that you want to maybe cover one or.
You know, we have a lot of case studies put together and information. You know, one of our info sheets has all sorts of stuff in there because the call center is really the crux of our entire model, you know, because we took out the manager. Everything is about the tenant interaction and the facility front-facing interactions, which is all the call center. And so it doesn't matter about the behind the scenes with our district managers, with our client relations, because really those are there to support owners. It's the tenant interactions that are the face of any facility. And so, I mean, yeah, we've got, you know, all sorts of scenarios. One of our larger clients, in Tuscaloosa, rented 107 units in 3 days last May, all call center rentals. I think maybe only 20% were online rentals. And like, I don't care how good your manager is, that would have taken 2 weeks for someone to get through all those rentals in person. And I think where people don't understand the model or they even try to save too much money and skirt the real way to run these facilities is they say, all right, we're going to cut payroll and I don't need any human interaction. You know, we don't need it. We don't even really need a call center unless they're just going to rent. They're not going to make payments. They're not going to call us for issues. They'll put in email work tickets. None of that ever works. You have to give them human interaction options to be able to make this system work. And so we have example. You know, we had a facility in La Follette, Tennessee, that we did the audit for the owner 5 years before we bought it ourselves. And so we did the audit. We gave some feedback. It was really poorly managed. The same manager had been there 10 years and just not doing a great job. And we told them, look, you need to change this, change your management style, and your facility will run better. They didn't do any of it. We saw it hit the market. And this is one of the very first facilities we took over. And we said, all right, they haven't done any of these changes. Let's buy it. There's a lot of value add. And so I show up there to be, to turn over the facility. And the manager had not been told yet that they were losing their job. And that's terrible. We always ask the seller to let them know in advance, because I don't want to be there to fire you day one, because we just don't run that way. And so understandably, she's upset. She said, look, my husband, it's a very small town, is the chief of police. You know, he's a deacon at the church. Everyone knows us. No one's ever going to rent here again. You know, you have a call center that's going to be doing this, and that's never going to work. We have an on-site manager. That site, when we bought it, was like 1.4, and it appraised at 4.2 18 months later with no expansion. All because we switched that model to not having the wasted resources of a manager in the office, just moving the rentals and interactions over the phone, and raising rents and doing tenant insurance in a site that small to have such a large return in a market that's such a small town market goes to show you will work if you give them human interaction. You cannot take that part away. I think Chase said at the beginning, and we recommend this And other call centers do this as well. And I think it's the best way to do it. 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, coverage for humans. And that way, if someone needs anything at all, we're here to help them. You know, because if you take that away, you're not going to be successful with it at all.
So yeah, I'm super excited to kind of stay in touch too on the AI stuff and see how that continues to change the way that your business continues to advance moving forward. I think that, yeah, we're just at the tip of what they're going to figure out with AI, and it's going to continue to get better and better. And that's going to improve all of our jobs as far as mm-hmm. how efficient we are and how we do business. So yeah. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for taking the time though. I appreciated your insights and your input.
Yeah, of course. I think one of the benefits of us being a family company is you can get a hold of any of us anytime, but you know, definitely reach out to myself. We can, you know, share all that information, but you can go to our website, copperstoragemanagement.com. Got a bunch of info on there, or you can just email me at Brett, B-R-E-T-T at copper, S as in Sam, M as in man.com. And then I'll be at all the upcoming trade shows, as a lot of other people will. So come see us in DC, see us at ISS, SSA, any of those shows. We'd love to meet face to face.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Self Storage Insight Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Just a quick reminder, this episode was brought to you by CC Storage. CC Storage is a no-cost property management software that allows you to pass the fees for credit card processing on to your tenants, freeing up some CapEx space for your business and helping you more efficiently run your storage facility. If you'd like to learn more about CC Storage, click the link in the description below, and we hope to see you again for our next episode.